July 11, 2020, it's the Watch for Pedro show.
so high. Got my ass stuck in a tree. It happens when I listen to me. Got my balls stuck in a vice. Damn it. It happens when I take my advice. I don't wanna have no more AIDS. All my repeat mistakes. I don't wanna have no more AIDS. All my repeat mistakes. Man, this ain't gonna be not at all. Gotta do things different. This ain't gonna lie for me, man. Yeah.
Pedro Show, happy Saturday, second Saturday for July. We got bright sky July here in Pedro. In fact, it's going to be 80 degrees. Probably means where Perk is in the valley, it's over 100. Tomorrow, too, I think. But not too sweaty. I mean, it is July, summertime. But we're in quitting quarantino mode. Brother Matt's at the Love Grotto 3 miles south of here. But I'm not totally man alone because the incredible genius invention Skype software with those programmers in Estonia. I got Rob Moss with me. You're calling, talking to me from Portland, right, Rob?
I'm in Portland, yeah.
Yeah, because the last time I saw you in person was actually Memphis. You gave me your book.
Actually, no, the last time I saw you was here in Portland. You were playing with Tav Falco, Panther Burns.
Yeah, but you gave me, no.
But I did send you my book, which
takes
place in Memphis.
Yeah, yeah, about Memphis.
Yeah.
But we were recording. We were recording a Christmas record.
We
went into a club one of the nights. Me and Larry Mullins was on the drums.
I know, but I wasn't there.
You sure?
I'm positive. I wish I was.
I think you were there, and we were rapping and shit. It's called Descend in Memphis, Descend in the book. But you didn't give me at the time it came in the mail. Anyway,
that's right.
We'll get into that fucking writing shit later. I want to talk about your music journey, though. And we should tell people what we started with. John Coltrane was with Miles Davis doing Freddie Freeloader. Got my ass stuck in a tree from your new record, Rob Moss and Skin Tight Skin. Rob, tell me your earliest musical recollection.
I was probably 5 or 6. And my dad played classical music, you know, records, you know, Hall of the Mountain King, Peter and the Wolf, you know, it was like visual stuff, but... You know, a little bit later, you know, I was 7, 1970. I listened to, you know, Top 40, WPGC, put, you know, cassette deck up against the radio. You know, Indiana Wants Me, Rainy Night in Georgia.
Your earliest music memory is your pop playing classical.
Yeah.
And that one was like kind of for kids, right? Because they tell the story every
instrument. The Peter and the Wolf. It's
That's
great.
That's what I'm saying. Every cool. instrument is, or a character in the story is an instrument.
Exactly.
Yeah, something like that.
I love that.
And, interesting. Were they just listeners? I mean, where was this?
In Maryland, outside Washington, D.C.
Okay.
At that time.
So, were they players or just listeners?
My mom played piano.
So there's a piano in the living room?
Yeah, that's it.
Now, did you get put on lessons?
I played cornet in, I don't know, 4th or 5th grade in elementary school, and I was terrible, and I quit. I didn't stick it out.
About the piano. Did you have piano?
Oh, no, I didn't. I did not.
Because we have a lot of people on the show who had piano, and it could be like a really lame experience. So that's why I was asking.
Yeah. No, I had that with cornet.
It seems the consensus is the teacher. And the teachers, they can make it either happening or not happening. That's if I, like, took a tally of all the piano lesson experiences. But I was going to ask you about school. So your school had music classes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised how many don't.
I'm aware.
It's why Slee got that Silver Lake Conservatory going, because he went back mm-hmm. to Fairfax High, and, yeah, there was no music. You know, where he learned trumpet, right?
Right.
So I ask about that, but you were in what? Cornet is like a bigger trumpet. So were you
like the smaller trumpet. It's like the small one. And they kind of said, oh, it's great for kids because, you know, you got small fingers. So this whole.
Cornet's got less tubing?
Yeah.
Okay, because the big cornet player when I was younger that was popular was Chuck Mangione.
Oh, I think I know, I remember what you're talking about.
And I think that's a cornet, and it has more, I think it has a little more tubing.
That's is that a cornet, or is that something else? Or maybe I played something else, and I thought it was a cornet. What I played was like a small trumpet.
Well, you know, there's a bugle, right, but it has no vowels.
Correct.
And that's probably got the less tubing. Because that's, right, the length of the tubing is how low you can go, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you got to do it all with your lips.
Well, I think it is with the lips anyway, but I'm just saying, like, your fundamental. For example, with the saxophones, right, there's the soprano, tenor, alto,
right.
baritone. There's a huge motherfucker you have to play on a ladder. It's a step ladder. Yeah, Brother Steve in the Stooges told me about, with the Violent Femmes, they rented one for him. Or they had some kid bring one to a gig. I mean, it was huge. But you can kind of stay in the same timbre. That's why a string bass and a violin are kind of exactly the same, except, relative size. Yeah, because, all notes aren't created equal. We would like to think so. But even on my bass guitar, which is only a four-string one, there's three A places you could play the low A.
Mm-hmm.
No, there isn't. There's two places.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's two places, and they sound different. The high A, I think there's like three places, and they're all different. Yeah, because you're dealing with more than one string, and it's a different part of the neck. I think they call the shit timber, like when a log falls. Anyway, so you didn't do good, so you quit?
Yeah, and then I didn't play anything for quite a while.
Yeah, but how long did you try?
Oh, like maybe at least a year, maybe two.
Okay, was it on your own volition, or did the professor suggest?
I think at that time, pretty much everyone in elementary school had to learn to play an instrument.
No, I mean to quit.
Oh, no, I think on my own. I think I said, okay, I gave it a year, I gave it 2 years.
Well, I'm asking you because my music teacher, after 10 weeks of hearing me try it on the clarinet, said, you try hard, Watt, but, you know, you should really think about stop wasting your time, my time, and they looked at the class, ours.
When was the last time you speak with him?
Mr. Luna. Well, it was 7th grade/12, okay. Yeah. But I never took another music class after that. They got him at D. Boone just a couple months before that. That's one of the reasons why, you know, because his mother wanted me to play bass. So, wow, this music thing, okay, I'll try this. So I was just curious on your experience, Rob. So
yeah, I had a similar thing. I had a friend who said, man, you should learn to play bass or some other instrument once we got older, like, you know, end of junior high school into high school. That's really when it began again for me, for real.
Yeah. What? Guitar?
Bass first.
Oh, bass first. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm working on the mind reading, but I still got to use words. Okay. So the bass, what was your first bass?
I had a Fender Precision.
Wow, that's a good one.
That's the only bass I ever owned, that one bass.
Yeah, you never had to get a shitty one to start off on, huh, to build up the muscles?
It was used. I got to deal with it at, you know, Veneman's Music.
Well, probably, when it comes to Fender P basses, a used one's probably better. I mean, it depends, I guess, on the shape. But what I'm talking about is like the action. The first bass I had was a K-A-Y.
Uh-huh.
And, man, you could stick your arm between the frets and the strings. Yeah, it was tough. So what was the first amp?
What was the first what?
AMP.
first AMP.
That spells amp.
I'm sorry. I had a son. I can't remember which one it was.
Coliseum?
And a cabinet with, you know, what, four speakers. We replaced them at one point when I was an artificial piece. I don't remember what we put in there, like Black Widows, something like that, I think. Does that make any sense? It's been so long, I don't remember.
It had 412s?
Maybe that would have been it.
Some Sunboxes had 215s.
Well, the box itself, the cabinet wasn't a Sun. I don't remember what was on that. I know the amplifier itself was a Sun.
Okay.
But I don't. It was like a no-name cabinet.
Like John Entwistle played Sun Coliseums. I think that's what you're hearing on Live at Leeds.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you're hearing him.
Yeah, but I mean the amplification.
I know.
But he
could play anything that would sound awesome.
I think. Who else played? I mean, the big bass amp was, of course, the SVTs. But Sun, there were some people played those. And in those days, because the PA at the gigs in Arena Rock was mainly for the singing. So that's why when you see pictures of those gigs, there's buttloads of amps on the stage. They're on the power of the... Yeah, pretty fucking sound, lame sound anyway, you know. I want to play something off your new, I saw this lady open up for Alice Cooper, Susie Quattro, and she had a song called 48 Crash, and we're going to play from your new record, No 48 Crash.
Thank you. I can smell my piss. I can taste my food. I can catch my breath. Guess I'm doing good. So I'll make noise from my window every night. Yeah, I'll make noise from my window every night.
Remember to sleep. Remember to dream. Remember waking up once on every morning. and fro. The monkey in the jungle going.
Show that was No 48 Crash, Rob Moss, Skin Tight Skin, and B. Jones, brand new, Korea, South Korea, Stone to Sand, the James Rocket, brand new, they haven't had music in a while, Boccaccio, the James Rocket, Maya from the City, Monkey Nose, Few, a song for the Chihuahua Band, Holy Bulsara from Pat Smear's second solo record. Love Pat Smear. Dietrich and Barnes and John Dietrich from Deerhoof. With Out and About, Tim Barnes, great drummer man, living in Louisville. I think John's in Berkey. And then him with Deerhoof and Waterleo Smith doing Flower Live. Rob Moss, Skin Tight Skin with Tony Alva's Pictures. I grew up... When I moved from the Navy housing here in Pedro to Park Western Estates, next door neighbor was Tony Alva, so this probably ain't him.
No, Tony Alva in Dogtown, Santa Monica.
It's probably the tall guy that skates.
The skater.
Yeah, but
yeah.
He was a bass player and ended up with clothes, independent. You know that. He's in a couple bands. I can't remember the names of them, but he was one of the kind of connects between kind of punk and skating. He was at a Stooges gig in Florida at that Art Basel thing and skating on cans. You know what cans are? Containers? You got them there in Portland.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
Yeah, there's 20s and 40s. 53s are on the semi-trucks. They use those one way. But the way, like in the old days, they used pallets, and before that, they used barrels. But the more modern way of moving shit around is with these containers. We call them cans, and that's the main work in Pedro, right? Longshore. And I know they do that in Portland. So Tony Alva was skating on these fucking... They made the skating thing with cans. It was a trip on the beach. And the Stooges played right after that. It got dark, and we played in front of the cans that Tony was skating. He's always been very kind to me, so that was cool. But I did grow up next to a guy named Tony and Dennis Alva, his older brother. Martin Tony was twins, maybe, fraternal. And then Dennis, him and Ray Bernard, another Pedro guy, they're the first guys to really get me into Black Sabbath when I was like, you know, 12, 13. That's why I moved there. So I owe those guys. In those days, there'd be the guy a couple years older who painted his bedroom black and had posters with the ultraviolet, purple light, and play you stuff like Paranoid, first Black Sabbath album, stuff like that. And so I got to give respect to those guys because they got me going in a way. That and 8 tracks with the Columbia, right? You send in a dime and they send you 10, 8 tracks. And then they start sending you one every month. And
if right, it's the club.
If you don't send it back, you have to buy it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's so funny. When I signed to Columbia... Part of the contract is they get to sell so many of your records at really economical price for that club. Yeah. So if you get on base, if you got on base, then you probably got into the shit about after school with the bedroom band or the garage or basement band.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was, I mean.
Well, I've got to ask you about it again. My mind reading skills are kind
of. Oh, yeah. Well, Brian Gay, who was actually the first bass player on Government Issue when I started writing songs, you know, before the GI started. That's like 1979. There was no Discord at that point, no teen idols. There was an album called 30 Seconds Over DC, which is like a, this compilation album. So we were taking our cues from that because there was no all ages shows or at least very few. So to go in to see a club, someone had to sneak you in.
Well, what about so, shit like, Root Boy Slim?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We couldn't see the, a lot of those bands.
Yeah. They were playing from another
venues that would card you.
But they also kind of was from another.
Yeah,
I remember reading about
team.
This band in Cream magazine called the Good Rats.
Yep.
And it reminds me of that kind of stuff, you know?
Sure.
Because club culture kind of got lost with arena rock, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's two different things.
And right, but I think in the 60s, and I was too young, but 125 months with the Stooges, club culture was huge in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of went away, yeah.
So we, I had, my friend Mark Alberstadt, he was the first drummer in Government Issue. He had a, he's an older brother, and he could sneak us into a couple different joints. We go to the Psychedelic, and we see shows at University of Maryland because he was able to get us into those. So we saw the Slinky Boys,
yeah,
Black,
I was gonna say,
Bad
that's
Brains,
the other band, Slinky
bands
Boys.
Like that.
You would put Bad Brains. They're a little after though, right?
They actually they started early.
Well. The version we know, right? Because Gary, Dr. No told me that, yeah, he was actually the bass player. They were like a fusion band.
Correct. Yeah, they were like a fusion sort of jazz band, and then,
yeah,
you know,
jazz fusion, that's what he said.
Correct. Yeah, well, that, well, I saw them, you know, I didn't see that particular set, but I saw them, you know, early on. They really weren't playing any reggae at all at that point. It was really fast. It was great. HR would do his backflips.
On time.
Oh, yeah, it was just incredible.
Yeah, to land on your feet on the downbeat, I mean, Jesus yep. Christ. Yeah, I got to do a lot of gigs with him. But to me, Slinky Boys and Root Boy Slim, yeah, they were. But I guess, because I had somebody on the show that did, a couple of months ago, did a DC documentary.
Mm-hmm.
About this kind of period.
It was more proto-punk.
Yeah, it's before the disc, like you're saying, before Discord.
Before hardcore. And that's the stuff that really got me excited about music in the first place. I mean, it's seen the Slinky Boys. If you had ever seen them live, or if you see some early videos of them, because you can find it on YouTube, you can see how much fun they had on stage. And when I saw that, I was like, I'm going to learn to play an instrument. I'm going to form a band, because I want to do that. Look how much fun they're having. And that I was able to get Marshall Keith from the Slinky Boys, you know, all these years later to play on my album. You know,
yeah,
to me, that was like totally coming around full circle. I mean, around the same time I heard, you know, the first Generation X album, and to get Bob Gurwood Andrews to say yes to play on my album here, you know, it's like, man, it's like bringing back the guys who totally inspired me in music, really, to form a band to play on this. You
yeah,
know, that's a rockin'.
Was it? Government Mule, a John Stab thing?
No, Government Issue, you're thinking.
Government
yeah.
Issue, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Government Mule's a different band.
Yeah, yeah, I recorded a song with those guys, yeah, and it was like some creep. Yeah, it's a different thing. They lost their bass player, and they asked me to do like a medley with them. Yeah, I meant Government Issue, of
right.
course. Right.
And I played with them in 83, but I've known all those guys like way before, and like the first like Legless Bully P. I'm there on backup vocals, and I do that big moo, you know, in a cowboy fashion. But it wasn't until, you know, it's a couple years afterwards that I get to join the band. You know, after Artificial Peace broke up, later on, I joined Government Issue and went out on their U.S. tour in 83.
Yeah, because there was a lot of different, right? John had a lot of guys play with him.
Okay. Oh, yeah, there was, I don't know how many bass players played in GIs over the years, but a lot.
And then, by the way, we got to tell the people, we lost John Stapp. I mean, he was clearly an individual, you know, but in a lot of ways he was like the old days where the scene was so small and it was full of individuals, but cancer killed him a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's his birthday tomorrow. So.
Aw, he's a good cat. You know,
very much.
I was always a fan of his stuff, and kind of like a Tesco V, and no, I shouldn't say that, but kind of funny. Funny man.
We
had a guy over here in SoCal named Black Randy. Kind of mind me a little bit. Yeah, you're not afraid to like self-criticize.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, look, we're at the end of the first hour, July 11, 2020, edition Wap Peter Show. Special guest, Rob Mosshold, Typewire 2. July 11, 2020. It's the second hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
Back, all the attack, all the pushback, all the wasted and wanting and waiting for you. There's a cloud in my brain.
if the whole land was mine, then my dad would just scan and make you look at your body. You would go and blow your mind. This is what I'm all about. Trying to stay ahead of you. This is what I'm all about. I'm trying to find me some new young. This is what I'm all about. Trying to stay ahead of you. This is what I'm all about.
Walk for Pedro show. We started the second hour off with Rob Moss, Skin Tight Skin, doing Pushback, and Round Eye from Shanghai with your so fucking cool new record. Billy Stevenson, the Descendant drummer man, mixed that. Magnetic Hearts with Mercure Chrome, Chris Burns, Wasted and Wanton, live. Baby Grub from Midnight Bomber with Bombs at Midnight. Chris Ruskin, Knoxville. That name is a trip. I guess it's a cartoon character. You told me. Chicos Raros from Barcelona with Get Gran. Yeah. Big Handsome. And then Rob Moss, Skin Tight Skin with A Maltese Falcon. Which I remember Sidney Green Street, right, with the knife. And it's a lad. He's pissed off.
Mm.
Him and Peter Lorre.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah, great great fucking movie. And yeah, so okay, you start talking about who's on this record. So let's fucking talk about getting the record together in the first place. I mean,
sure.
Okay, what was the little seed that planted in your brain?
How did it happen?
I mean, right away. Okay. No, I understand how it happened, cuz by the way, you wrote me asking ask James Williamson or something, or Nels Klein also.
Correct.
So I know you were out fishing, but I mean, what was the seed, the thing that germinated the idea of making a record with different people?
Okay. That's what I well, mean. It's kind of multifold, but I hadn't played an instrument. I hadn't been in a band since 1983. I hadn't touched a bass probably since 1985 or 6, maybe. And a few years ago, I said, I want to learn how to play guitar. So I got a guitar and taught myself some covers and then went immediately back to writing because I wrote most of the songs for Artificial Peace.
Some covers.
Yeah, I started doing, I taught myself covers to learn how to play guitar.
Yeah, but I want to know which ones.
Oh.
Dolls?
Excuse me?
Dolls?
Trying to think if I did any Dolls. More like kind of classic rock stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, that first tune, it's got some little Night Ranger dually guitar in it. I got my ass done. Okay, if that's what you mean. Yeah. I was just curious because, you know, in the old days, that's how we learned. You copied off records.
Sure. Yeah. So, but I went right back to starting
Rob,
to write songs.
I got to tell you, when I met dudes in the punk scene, like Greg Ginn,
mm-hmm.
these guys never copied off records.
Yep.
It was a whole different thing.
Yep.
Now, when I asked Pat Smear if he listened to anybody, he said Queen.
Yeah, sure.
So not everybody was the same, of course. Okay, so you teach yourself guitar.
Yeah, I write some songs. I use my phone to make a video of me playing guitar by myself in my basement. I put it on my Facebook page, a couple of these. And a friend of mine says, you know, if you want to turn these into real songs, record them at my studio, you know, come on over. So I said, sure. So I had to write lyrics now. And we had a friend who's a drummer who played on the first couple sessions. And then we found a couple different other drummers, including Spit Sticks later on.
You knew this
then,
guy. The connect wasn't fake. Look, you put a video there, but he already knew you.
Yeah, we knew each other. Okay. Just for the hell of it, I just put some videos
up. I don't want to give that guy too much credit for making any fucking happening connections.
Well, what he did is he gave me the opportunity to come into a real studio in his house and record.
I'm talking about the clown who owns Fake Look.
Oh, fuck that. I'm not talking about
That's him. What I'm trying to clear up. That's what I'm trying to clear up, bro.
You already had
to connect with your buddy.
Yeah,
and
correct.
And Spit Sticks, people, you got to – I know he teaches drums up in Portland.
He does.
And he's the drummer man behind the real version of Fear.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. So, but one of the things is I literally had just taught myself to play guitar And I went into writing songs, and I'm like, okay, I can get away playing rhythm guitar, and I can sort of sing, but I can't play lead guitar at all. So, I wanted someone really good to play on these, and it would be a huge ask to get one guy to, you know, play on, you know, 14 songs and maybe become a touring band, maybe not. So I thought it'd be a lot easier just to ask one guy to play on one song. So that's why I was able to get, you know, all these guys like, you know, Bob Durwood Andrews and, you know, Marshall and Billy Lasugian, Nels Klein, thanks to you and others who, said, okay, one song, I can do that. And that's how I got all these, you know, great guys to play my album.
Technology now, we can trade files.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or 1983 with John Stabb, hard to do.
Very much.
You'd have to be in the room with him.
Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, there's people, like one of the guys, he's in Rome, who recorded, you know, the piano on one of the songs. Actually, it's Francesco. Wow. You know him from
Tapos Band. Incredible piano man. Yeah, he's a Roma guy. And I just love his playing, Francesco. Look, I want to play Ugly Chair.
Very quiet. me be yourself and I. Music to me slash, how to lie. No way. Only die.
Thank you. Thank you. ask the question is having three martinis too much? Well, if you ask the question, that means it's probably too much.
My heart lose its mind. song took a little doing to get, but Nancy Sinatra put out, so we got it. The song's called My Boots Are Made for Walking. We're hatched now. You can cut off the incubator. Sauna night. I think Jello and Henry already did that. I'll have to do something different. You had a hot tub on stage?
Why, for Pedro Show, Ugly Chair, Rob Moss's Skin Tight Skin. Skin Tight. You know what? Skin Tight was the actual title to Shake Appeal.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't shit you, Rob.
I know you wouldn't. And there's also a Suzy Quatro song, Skin Tight Skin.
Maybe that's why it changed. I don't know. But I asked Ig once about that because, man, that is a monster lick.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Jay Masters told me it was a little too rockabilly. But I thought it was a monster lick. Anyway, when I asked Ig, he said, Mike, Little Richard. You know, mm-hmm. It's a straight from the well right there. Ugly Chair, Rob Moss, Skin Tight Skin. Tight Pants. That was the name of the fucking song. It was Tight Pants. It wasn't Skin Tight.
Okay.
It was Tight Pants, and then it became Shake Appeal. There was a few of Stooges songs that had other titles that I got to learn. You can imagine me hanging around those guys. I asked them about 10 billion questions. Finally, the youngest guy in the band. Then Red and the Black with the Nels Klein on lead guitar. No, it ain't. This is Tom Watson. It's the year after. 1999, the Exit Inn, and Nashville got to thank J.B., we're getting his buddy, I think Frank, to flow that. A Blue Oyster Cult song. Red and the Black, me and D. Boone started playing that when we were 13. Providence, after that, Dan Klukas. No D, Providence, right? Like, who owned this shit? Jeb Bishop, Damon Smith, Matt Crane. Peter Lochner from Old Cleveland Scene, It Takes a Lot to Laugh. Red Wine from Scott H. Burham. Lewis Cole with Clouds of Flies. That's an image. A New Hard Folk with Harder Than You. And then you got You with the Government Mule doing Lee Hazelwood, Nancy Sinatra. In fact, he's...
The cover. The Boots Are Made for Walking.
Yeah, well, John gives a little intro.
Yeah.
Explaining it.
Yeah, that was recorded at CBGB's in 1983.
Yeah, the tour you did.
Correct.
Yeah, the infamous tour where you never wanted to play music again for a long time after. No. Other shit probably came out in your life, right?
Of course.
Yeah. But you got, that's the thing about fucking music, right? You can always go back. You can always start whenever. Joe Baez, you know, Sacred Trust, he's 27 years old when he started guitar. He was an artist, a painter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Vincent only painted his last 10 years of his life. He didn't paint as a kid. So, you know, I don't think it's ever too late or to start or go back, revisit.
Correct.
Even with reading. You know, I read Ulysses, Jim Joyce, in my 20s, and I read it again in the 40s. I'm glad, you know, same words, right?
Mm-hmm.
Completely different reads because, well, obviously I was in a different place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, what about your writing thing?
Well, I wrote a book called Descending Memphis. It's sort of like a coming-of-age detective story set in 1956 Memphis. So, it, of course, it's got, you know, early rock and roll in it. And, you know, as there's a number of cameos, you know, people who were, you know, real people who were in there. And I was able to get in touch with people in both Memphis and Nashville who were there at the time, you know, who were either musicians or some who worked, you know, in, you know, management, and so forth. And I would just ask them, I would get on the phone with some of these people and ask them all sorts of questions. So I did a whole lot of research and reading before writing the book. So, you know, there's a lot of the locations are real places and so forth. And the sort of mystery that gets solved kind of hinges is on some, you know, real things that happened to some degree, but you know, I don't want to spoil the story.
Did you read Tab's book on Memphis?
I did. I have it. I have a signed copy too.
Well, he writes himself into all that shit.
Well, of course he does.
Like he's there 100 years ago, right? He's at the plantation or whatever the fuck. Actually, I think the first Panther gig was at a former plantation.
Right.
He told me something like that. But that book is so wild that way. All of a sudden, sure. It's Tab.
Yeah, he's there like all through the various years doing yeah. All these things. It's awesome, that, you know, on his motorcycle.
Yeah, on his motorcycle. And then there's that other cat, too, that Union guy on his motorcycle. Maybe an Indian. We're at the end of the second hour, July 11, 2020. Dish What? Peter Show, Hold Tight for Hour 3. July 11, 2020, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Most times you meet a gal, shorter than you do. This is the story of the one who does. What happens? The honeymoon is over. Guys are looking pretty, really funky. When you appear on my clouds, what did I do to get a girl like you? Bring home the cash. This isn't what I planned. Clean up the sink. It's all that I stink. How much more can I stand? Take out the trash. Bring home the cash. This isn't what I planned. Clean up the sink. It's all that I stink. How much more can I stand?
The last thing you remember, how it was reversing myself. for you. We'll be right back.
Pedro Show start off the third hour with Real Fine Kitty, Rob Mawson's Skin Tight Skin for his wife, Crane, different than that Matt Crane guy last hour, doing Tomorrow We'll Be There, Paul Jacobs' brother, Dream Phases, Tell the Truth, this is some Nomad Eel stuff, Pedro label, Mother's Life, Black Moon Tape, Zigzags, Scavenger, Live on KXLU, and then Life at 33 and a third RPM. Rob Moss, it's getting tight. Have you ever thought about writing a 33 and a 30? You know what I'm talking about, this series?
No. What are you talking about?
There's a series of books called 33 and a third.
Where, I'm not familiar.
Well, this is what will happen. They every title is a different author. And what it is, it's like you concentrate on one record. Make a whole book about, you know, First Stooges album or something like that. Trout Mask Replica. And there was one for Double Nickels on the Dime, Michael Fourier wrote. So I was going to ask you, like, if you were going to make a book about an album.
What album would I choose?
Yeah.
You know, top of my head, Willie Alexander and the Boom Boom Band's first self-titled album came out on MCA in 1978. It was the record that people then who knew them thought it was going to break them, make them huge, and it didn't. And it's an amazing album. It's such a great record.
That's like Bob Crosby with Captain Beefheart, right? They're going to be bigger than the Beatles.
Yep.
Well, I think it's kind of hard to know who's going to really.
Yeah, I actually, that album, I found it. I was living in New York. There was a guy in my building who worked in the music industry, and he got lots of promo albums and other stuff, and he would just keep chucking records out in the basement by the garbage cans every now and then. And I'd go down, you know, I'd scoop up the good stuff and trade in the crap. And And one of the records was that Willie Alexander and the Boom Boom Band album. And it had been out for some years, but I had never heard it. And I bring it upstairs to my room and I put it on and I'm blown away, especially the second song, Rock and Roll 78. And I'm thinking, what, this is just amazing. The opening of that song, Billy Lasugian playing, you know, his solo over Willie Alexander's piano. It still brings the hair up on the back of my neck. And when I started making my wish list of guitar players to play on my album, I found Billy Lasugian on Facebook. And I didn't know him, but I sent him a note.
Oh, there we go with another connect.
Yeah, connect. And he was like, he replied, you know, love to give it a go.
Actually, the connect goes way back to your buddy that worked in the industry, right?
Yeah, I suppose. He used to manage the band Prong, among other things,
yeah.
Right? I never told him, hey, all those records that you're tossing, I'm saving the good ones and trading in the rest. I figured I'll just let him keep doing it.
So, they were cutouts, right?
Some were cutouts. Some had, like, you know, promotional use only, because he would get all these albums from people.
Yeah, there was a huge corruption thing on that, right?
Yeah. So that's how I first heard that album. That's how I first heard that guitar player. And that whole album is just amazing. And so to go back, you know, if I was to write a book about an album, which I think probably has an incredible story behind it, it's that album.
Now, what about, why didn't you get Willie to do piano?
You know?
Because
good point.
Answer me this, Rob. Isn't originally rock and roll piano music, not guitar music? The guitar came later.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it comes out of Boogie Woogie Piano.
Yeah, yeah. So, back to the other question. Why no Willie on this record?
Well, because I'm saving him for, like, when I do volume two.
Okay. Stupid one. Okay. Here, I want to play There's My Ride.
Young man, ready to leave this place. Restart the human race. Left, right, on counting the dial. Let me ride, I'll see you around. Yeah, I'll see you around. Baby, I'll see you around. Maybe I'll see you around. Time to get away, time to get out of here. Time to get away and leave all the gear. Time to get away, is all that I need. If I can't go now, then I'll stumble in. Breathe, time to get away, time to get out of here. Time to get away and leave all the gear. Time to get away, is all that I want. If I can't go now, I'll eat a croissant. Oh man, what am I still doing here? Hey man, I'm gonna get me a beer. That ride should be long gone. Long gone before the dawn. Gone before the dawn. Gone before the dawn. Gone before the dawn. Time to get away, time to get out of here. Time to get away and leave all the gear. Time to get away is all that I need. If I can't go now, I'll stay home and free. Time to get away, time to get out of here. Time to get away and leave all the gear. Time to get away is all that I want. If I can't go now, I'll eat a croissant. Yeah, man, I'm ready to leave this place. Restart the human race. Left, right, on counting the dial. Let me ride, I'll see you around. Yeah, I'll see you around. And around. Way downtown. Ghost town. 6 feet down. Underground.
Yeah.
for Pedro show, just talking about how the guitar made it in there for rock and roll. A little more portable to bring around because they didn't have the Casios yet. And then they also had to hide Elvis's dick. I think Bill Black, the bass man, did. Can you imagine rock and roll with no drums? But, yeah.
It's sort of out,
right? Yeah, he would slap on the neck, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, probably Larry Graham picked up on that maybe to come up with this thing. We heard There's My Ride, Rob Moss, Skin Tight Skin, and Galaxtasy. These guys talking about, you know, making lemonade out of lemons. And during this lockdown, they've made 8 albums. They live out in Joshua Tree here in the desert. 8 albums!
Jeez.
So, hope that makes everyone feel real guilty for wasting fucking time, motherfuckers. Okay, and finally, Babel Tower. Yeah, what other kind of tower is there? Rob Moss and Skin Tight Skin. Yeah. Yeah, you were talking about maybe somebody to be in a band to play gigs with. Well, you don't really have to worry about that now.
Not right now.
Or maybe streaming.
Yeah, that could happen. People doing that.
But when did the record just recently came out, right?
Yeah, about 2 months ago.
Oh, 2 months ago. Okay, so we're a little late. Yeah, because, you know, I've been doing 3 shows a week. And I have to book way out now. It ain't bad. I ain't complaining.
I ain't either.
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like I'm bellyaching. So a couple months ago, ain't it trippy when you get a record done that you're ready, you know, and all the work that went into it and everything, and it's ready, let's do it again, right?
Mm.
So you're already thinking of Volume 2. Well, yeah.
Oh.
Willie on piano, of course.
You heard it here first.
Okay. Okay. You told me that you built up the songs, you know, for this baby here, as you were learning guitar.
More or less, yeah.
That's really interesting. I mean, you said you learned some, you copied some stuff off records, but as you were learning, you were writing.
I'd rather write my own songs than play someone else's. So I said, instead of trying to do that, I'll just write my own songs. They're more fun to play for me. So that's what I did.
Now, what about demo?
What about demo?
Like I had Boris on the show Wednesday. They told me they don't do demos. They just improvise in the studio, and that's what happens.
Oh, no. I mean, I would write the songs and...
Well, I understand the lead guitar guys. I mean, they came in, they had to hear the songs, right?
Right, yeah. We'd send them, a rough mix that was dry that they would, you know, play back to record.
Did your studio buddy play on this?
Yeah, Dwight Reed. He plays bass on all the tracks.
Okay. And you didn't play any bass. You abandoned bass all the way for this.
Yeah, I haven't played bass in years, so now
I'm playing
rhythm guitar. That's all I can play. I can play some really bad scale leads, but I won't do that. I'll just play my power chords.
I'm not that interested in that. I'm more interested in you abandoning bass guitar.
No,
look, it's okay. Come on. Let your free flag fly, whatever device you got to have in your fucking hands or your mouth. You know, it might end up being a coronet if it was a coronet.
That's right. It started there.
You know what I mean? Because it's sort of like the pen knife. I was reading this thing about the art in a knife, a pocket knife.
Mm-hmm.
It's what's going to be carved with that fucking knife. That's where the art is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So same thing with a rhythm guitar or a bass guitar. A lead guitar. You know, Nels Klein sometimes works those motherfuckers with whisks and ray guns, toy ray guns. I've seen him be so unorthodox. That's okay.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever it takes, right?
To get the sound, whatever it takes, exactly.
Or feel or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we already got enough rerun shit, so why not venture, you know, to unknown or whatever? Mm-hmm. And when you get this Volume 2 going, will you come back on the show?
And
can we talk about it?
Of course.
Thanks so much for being on the show, Rob. Really big honor for me. What about, you got a book plan?
Well, my original plan for the book was to do a trilogy. So the first one takes place in 1956, and I was going to have the protagonist, Tommy Rodine, you know, be on another one in the 1960s. So he's in another point in his life. He's now in his 30s, and, of course, the music has changed in Memphis. And then the third book would be in the 1970s, and, you know, he's dealing with other issues in his life and different types of music
is
and a whole new mystery to solve. Yeah, there's so much going on in Memphis.
Okay. In the 70s, in Memphis, Ardent Studio.
Yeah.
ZZ Top, Tres Hombres.
There's lots of great stuff going on there. But will I have time to write these other two books? I don't know. Okay. But they're in my head.
But you know what? If you get the book done before the next record, come on the show and let's talk about that. You don't know how much reading influences my music, so I'm a big fan of literature.
Yeah, well, that's how Iggy Pop, you know, I think when he's writing his lyrics, he would read, actually, it was like detective novels. He wanted that, you know, sparse, bare, to-the-point stuff, and that's what that influenced him a lot, I've heard.
I use it for the music part, so it's not as easy to rip off other people's licks.
Mm.
Yeah, because you have to, like, kind of go through a layer of abstraction.
Yep.
Okay. People, July 11th, 2020 edition, Walk for Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.